This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. It's being described as one of the most significant steps the federal government has taken in response to global warming. New rules by the Obama administration to cut carbon emissions by 30% over the next 15 years.
Environmentalists are applauding the move. The coal industry and other critics call it overly intrusive and say it will cost jobs and raise energy prices. The Environmental Protection Agency says it will give states flexibility about how they cut greenhouse gases, whether it's shifting from coal to natural gas, investing in renewable energy, or upgrading aging power plants.
Massachusetts is one of several states that have been implementing some of these strategies for nearly a decade. They've done that through the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGI, and it's on track to reduce emissions not just by 30%, as the feds want, but by 40% by the year 2030.
So two views now on the Obama administration's plan. First, from David Cash, commissioner of the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection, who knows a lot about the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. And David Cash, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Anthony and Sasha. It's great to be on the show.
And Myron Ebell joins us from Washington, D.C. He's director of Energy and Global Warming Policy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And Myron Ebell, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Commissioner Cash, let me start with you. Under these new EPA rules, states would have the option to follow the kind of thing that Massachusetts has done over the past 8 or 9 years. So tell us what the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative has accomplished in this state.
Okay, great. And it's accomplished quite a bit. So we've been reducing emissions in the REGI states since 2008. And the results have been roughly 40% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions already from our generators, and at the same time, big economic benefits throughout the region. Hmm. Now, this may come as a surprise, especially given the debate that that the new EPA rules have spawned, but there's no question that, as Governor Patrick has said many times, that environmental policy can go hand-in-hand with economic development, and that's what we've seen here. And that's because what REGI has done by being a market-based approach is that's found the most cost-effective way to reduce emissions. And some of the revenue that's been generated through REGI has gone right back into energy efficiency and renewable energy. At the beginning of REGI, when we were doing modeling about what the impacts might be, some of the models showed that we might increase our electricity rates by 1% to 2%, and there were some critics that said it would be even more. The results, 8% decrease in our energy costs since we've begun REGI.
So let me jump in there, because that's, okay, so good news for Massachusetts, yep. But what about states that have heavily coal-based economies, for example? Won't rules like this, the kind that the EPA is now proposing to impose, couldn't that set those states back economically?
Well, there's no question that these rules are providing the right incentives for a transformation of our economy toward a more clean energy economy. And there's no question that there will be states that that is going to be more challenging. But I think what's been very good about the EPA rule, as we've been reviewing it today, is that it has a relatively long time frame for compliance to happen, and it has a lot of flexibility. And I think, as we've seen in states throughout the country that have put in place energy efficiency and renewable energy programs, that there's significant savings. Even in states, for example, like Oregon, which has the cheapest electricity rates around, energy efficiency programs are bringing big benefits in terms of ratepayer savings. And that's for customers who live in their homes. That's for big businesses. I mean, in our state, we're seeing reductions from Fortune 500 companies to mom-and-pop stores.
All right, so good news for our state. Line. Commissioner Cash, I'm going to jump in because I can hear Myron Ebell dying to get in on this conversation. Right. Your response to the new rules proposed by the EPA?
They will have virtually no environmental benefit, and they will have significant economic costs, even for states like Massachusetts. The fact is that Massachusetts and New England and New York already have very high electric rates, and what that has caused is the transfer of heavy industry that uses a lot of energy to states and countries that have low-cost energy. But people in Massachusetts still buy products that rely on using a lot of energy, so it's going to hit states like Indiana and Ohio directly, but it will hit Massachusetts and other high energy cost states indirectly, because you will be paying more for manufactured goods that require lots of electricity. So I think, you know, this idea that Massachusetts has benefited from RGGI, Massachusetts and New England in general and New York are economic laggards. The 2008 recession is not over in places like New England. And my state, home state of Oregon, it's an economic basket case. So I would look to the states that have lower cost electricity and energy in the heartland. Texas is the motive engine in this country. They have a lot of population growth. They produce a lot of energy and they use a lot of energy. Mm. And I think that should be the model.
But when I hear Commissioner Cash talk, and David Cash, I'll let you back in this conversation, but Byron Ebell, just based on what I heard the commissioner say, is that it seems like when you hear about the relative success of RGGI in states like Massachusetts, the lesson seems to be that when you impose rules that guide industry and consumers, they respond positively. And that's what happened here.
Well, you know, if you create unreasonable regulations of any kind, people will respond by trying to get around them. But the fact is that New England in general is bleeding economic activity that uses energy to other parts of the world and other parts of the United States. And so if you think that the entire world can run on services and providing services, that's fine. But if you think that you're still going to need steel and cement and other things that take a lot of energy to fabricate, including solar panels, which are all produced in China because they get 80% of their electricity from coal, then I don't think the world is going to work very well. It might work in, a very high academic, financial, high-powered economy like New York and Boston have, but I don't think it's going to work for most of the world.
David Cash, your response to that.
Yeah, I just don't think the empirical evidence support what Myron is saying. I mean, I think that we, for one, we have seen this broad economic growth across all RGGI states, which have a mix of economic landscapes. Massachusetts and the New England states, in fact, have rebounded off of the recession better than most other states. And part of that is driven by the growth of the clean energy sector in Massachusetts, where we've seen 6 to 12% job growth in the sector in the last 5 years. We have 80,000 employees now in Massachusetts, 5,000 businesses. And it's kind of interesting that America has been seen as a country, as a global leader in technical innovation and entrepreneurship. And this just seems like an obvious case where the United States can be the global leader in the innovation that will bring us into the clean energy future, in which we're going to get massive benefits from avoiding the impacts of climate change, associated co-benefits on the public health from local air pollution, the SO2 and NOx and particulates, et cetera, and the benefits of energy efficiency and renewable energy as a saver of energy costs for those who partake in them, which is exactly what we've seen in Massachusetts.
Well, Myron Ebell, let me ask you sort of where we go from here. These new rules regulating carbon emissions have been implemented using President Obama's executive authority. What's the response here? Should we expect a fight in court? Can Congress push back? What's your prescription here?
First, it needs to be recognized that Congress debated a similar plan in 2009 and 10 when the Democrats controlled both the House and the Senate by wide margins. The Waxman-Markey cap-and-trade bill, which had a lot more than cap-and-trade in it, had many of the elements of this EPA plan. That was defeated in the Senate. It never had a vote, and the reason it never had a vote is because it did not have majority support. So Congress has already said no to this. And I think as the American people find out what's in it, they will say no as well. So the question is, can it be delayed, the final implementation be delayed through the end of the Obama administration and let a new president of whichever party take another look at it before it goes final? And so I hope that there will be procedural obstacles and there will be litigation which will slow it down long enough so that we can get into 2017 and take another look at it.
Myron Ebell, I want to just ask you one final question, and this gets down to a sort of fundamental thing that the president said over the weekend during his national radio address. And he said that power plants dump 40% are responsible for 40% of carbon emissions into the atmosphere. We regulate all kinds of toxins that get dumped into our waters, into our land. Why shouldn't there be stringent regulations about how much carbon gets dumped into the atmosphere?
Carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. People keep referring to it as carbon pollution. Carbon dioxide is a naturally occurring trace gas, which is necessary for life on Earth. Plants cannot photosynthesize without it. And pollutants have local effects. Carbon dioxide, it's the global level. If we cut our emissions, but we export heavy industry to China and Brazil and India, that isn't going to cause emissions to go down, and therefore the environmental benefits of this plan, without the agreement of particularly China and India to cut their emissions, is pretty hopeless.
David Cash, I'll give you the final word there. Yeah, go ahead and respond, David Cash.
China and India and other developing countries have said that we've got to, you know, the United States has already been very developed, and there's got to be collaboration across countries doing this. And this is exactly what the president is showing, that the United States is serious about this. And the claims of that Congress has said no to this, well, the Supreme Court has said that EPA has absolute authority to regulate carbon, and that's exactly what we're doing. And this seems like the same arguments that were made in the early 90s about addressing SO2 and NOx. And all of the concerns about that turned out to not be true.
All right. So the debate,
effectively, with big benefits.
And obviously this debate won't end here. David Cash, Commissioner of the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection, thank you.
Thank you, Anthony and Myron and Sasha.
And Myron Ebell, Director of Energy and Global Warming Policy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He joined us from NPR in Washington. Myron Ebell, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Stay with us. Coming up, a Harvard physics professor who wants to do away with a traditional college lecture. He's come up with a new way of teaching that he considers more effective. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.